300 years later, that event and the death of the guy who was guarding the baggage, Protolandus, the Count of the Breton March, he's a real person, has been turned into Charlemagne leading a vast crusade against forces of Paynim, Muslims. Crude caricatures of Muslims, actually, in the Song of Roland itself. But the point is that the story is a story of courage, of prowess, of military valor. One swing of the sword and 100 heads come off. These sort of exaggerated kinds of things. These were sort of action movies for the Middle Ages, you see, and probably appealed to about the same age group and largely, one supposes, to men. The story is virtually without women. Great Roland, for example, of course, dies in the story. His affianced bride simply drops dead when she hears this. That's her role in the story. Women simply have no place in this story. Long, loving accounts of weapons. Sounds like guys talking about their golf clubs. This is a poem full of what we might call medieval guy stuff. You see? And this is the world of chivalry. This is the ethos of those who fight. Now, in later lectures, when we come, for example, to the Renaissance period, we'll have occasion to revisit these governing classes and talk a little bit about the cultivated gentleman. But for the High Middle Ages, the cultivated gentleman is not yet much in evidence. It is the warrior cultivated by the chivalric ethos. Thus far, then, those who fight. Now, those who pray. Fundamentally, we're talking here about the clergy of the medieval church. I mean, in principle, everyone in the Middle Ages was supposed to pray. But we're talking here about society's leaders. We're talking about the clergy. Now, inside the clergy, of course, there were some fairly stiff quarrels over whether monks, on the one hand, or bishops, on the other, were holier, were closer to God, and therefore ought to be the natural leaders of the society. There were quite fierce debates about that subject. Suffice it to say that the clergy agreed that they should be in charge. They simply disagreed amongst themselves what kinds of clergymen should actually be in charge. Now, if we start trying to grasp this clergy from a number of different points of view, one thing we would notice right away is that the clergy everywhere were increasingly aristocratic. More and more and more, the clergy is made up of members of the aristocracy. Now, that didn't mean that there were not some opportunities for what we would call social mobility, that some persons could not rise simply by dint of talent up through the ranks of the clergy. That was always possible, but it was increasingly less possible. Now, if you're thinking along with me here, you may notice that one reason why we may notice a more aristocratic character to the clergy is all of those younger sons of those noble families who are being sort of done out of secular careers by dint of primogeniture and who may not wish to go off crusading or may not wish to go off to the frontiers of Europe to seek their fortunes there. But an idea that we really should dispel, though it's one that one does sometimes encounter, is that the clergy was somehow a dumping ground for unwanted children. First of all, there was no reason why the clergy would have been pleased to have people dumped on them. You see, if you stop and think about it, they wouldn't have wanted the halt, the lame, and the witless to have been dumped on them. But they wouldn't even have wanted necessarily aristocratic boys to have been dumped on them. Let's look at this the other way around. Clerical office in the Middle Ages brought enormous prestige. It brought a secure life. It brought a good education. It brought a decent diet. It brought, relatively speaking, a very nice place to live. This was a very desirable career. This was a desirable life in almost every imaginable way. So it was not the case that the clergy was full of the unwanted and the unloved. Rather, it was itself a very competitive realm of experience. Now, we may say, just to extend that point a little bit, that convents provided opportunities for women to live free of male domination. One of the only places in medieval society where women governed other women was in a convent. One of the only places where women could be assured of education was in a convent. One of the only acceptable alternative lifestyles to marriage was a convent. So we shouldn't imagine convents as places where all of the unwanted girls of medieval Europe were dumped. This again was a place, and convents were also often heavily aristocratic. This was also a very desirable place to be, a desirable life to live.